Hi, the following program is an encore presentation in loving memory of our co-founder and co-host, Dr. John Palmer. We thank everyone for your contributions to help keep Dr. Palmer's legacy alive and to keep the radio show going. Every penny of your contribution is tax deductible and will go strictly to paying the radio station so that we can continue with Dr. John Palmer's legacy. His divine mercy will prevail. Live from WGBB, Long Island's oldest radio station, it's time for...
Listen up. Jesus is on the air. Hey, Tony, do you believe in mercy?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Yes, because I'm always looking for mercy. I'm always asking for mercy. I'm always looking for it.
From whom?
From my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Okay. Let me ask you another question. Do you believe there's a heaven?
I believe there's a heaven, and I believe there's a hell, and I'm going to tell you about hell today. And I believe there's a purgatory.
Where do you get those kinds of crazy thoughts?
Right here, baby. Right
where?
Here.
Where?
The diary.
Nobody on the radio can see what you're holding up.
Yes, we have webcam. What's
the
matter
with
you?
No, but the people on the radio driving the car, they're going to try and stop.
The Diary of St. Maria Faustina.
Who?
St. Maria Faustina.
Who's Maria Faustina? I never heard of her. Who is she?
Let our guest tell you.
No, no, no. You tell me. Who is St. Faustina? Go ahead.
She's the saint that Jesus visited many times. Let me tell you a little bit about
her. Why don't you do that?
Okay. St. Faustina is known today the world over as the Apostle of the Divine Mercy. She's classified by theologians among the outstanding mystics of the Church.
What's a mystic?
A mystic is someone
that's in touch with Jesus. And hears his voice internally.
Yes, and not only internally,
in many ways,
yes. And so
it's important, and I'm going to stop you from it, but it's important to point that out because St. Faustina, in her diary, has had many conversations with Jesus.
I'm going to bring that up.
Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you all about that. She was born in August.
He doesn't like me to interrupt him.
No,
so
he does
I can't
it all the time. He's outrageous.
Go ahead.
You know, one day I had to put duct tape on his mouth. You know? Well, anyway, she was born in August 1905, and she died in October 1938. How old is that makeup, Palmer?
33.
And who else was 33?
I know you're not. I don't know.
Come on.
Anybody
you know.
In this room 33?
You know.
Trevor, are you 33?
Who else was 33?
Jesus,
who else
of
what?
Course.
Come on.
Jesus.
Jesus. She died at the same age that Jesus died, at 33. Is it a coincidence? I don't know. I don't think so. She was the third of 10 children, and she was born into a poor and pious, pleasant family. And they were pleasant, and they were peasants too, in the heart of Poland. And at her baptism, she was given the name of Helena. As a child, she distinguished herself for her piety, her love of prayer, her industriousness, and her obedience, as well as her great sensitivity to human misery.
But what happened to her, though? Something special?
Oh yeah, something. Well, we'll get to that.
Well, she hurry had, up! I'm anxious.
She. Get that tape there, Trevor. She had hardly 3 years of schooling, and at the age of 14, she left the family to help her parents and to earn money and serving as a domestic in people's homes in the nearby cities. Throughout her life, she reported a number of visions of Jesus and conversations with him, which she wrote about in a diary, which I am holding in my hand right now. It's an amazing diary.
It's wonderful.
As a matter of fact, you know what, Palmer? We all have diaries in front of us. Mm-hmm. I do, our guest does, and you even have one.
I've read that book many times. It's wonderful.
When she was only 7, 2 years before Holy Communion, she already sensed in her soul the call to embrace the religious life. When she made her desire known to her parents, They did not acquiesce to her entering a convent, just like all parents did. I mean, we've studied many, many saints, and every saint that wanted to enter the convent, they were found with distaste by the parents. So it's a sort of a shock. She tried to live a religious life. On August 1st, 1925, at the age of 19, she saw a vision of suffering Jesus and rushed to the church where she was told by Jesus to join a convent.
You know, Tony, I'm going to interrupt again because a lot of people who are listening do not believe that anyone could possibly have visions or words. They don't believe it.
Well,
and we know it's true, and this has been well documented.
We know it's true. It is well documented. And it is, but they need to believe. They need to believe. Blessed are those that haven't seen and believe. They need to believe.
That's right.
That's a good point, Palmer.
I make them every now and then.
She pressed on by the vision of the suffering Christ and by the word of his reproach, because several times Jesus asked her to enter the convent. And she sort of put it on the back burner. This time, Jesus was direct. He says, "How long shall I put up with you, and how long will you keep putting me off?" That's in her diary, number 9.
Yeah.
She began to search for a convent to join. But wouldn't you know it, she couldn't get one. They wouldn't take her.
That's happened with a lot of saints.
It's happened with a lot. But finally, she was given an opportunity to join a convent of the Sisters of Our Lady of Mercy. She entered the convent of the Congregation of the Sisters of Our Lady of Mercy in Warsaw. In her diary, she said it seemed like she had stepped into a life of paradise. However, she knew nothing about the convent she was joining as a lay sister. And because of lack of education, she resolved herself in advance that she would be doing the minimum work. She would be a housekeeper. She would clean the floors. She would do the dishes. She was resolved to that task as long as she was able to enter the convent. Soon she began to receive more heavenly visions. She visited purgatory. She saw and spoke to Jesus and Mary several times. She visited hell, which we're going to talk about.
And why don't you tell us what happened, what she saw?
Want to talk about it now?
Why not?
Be happy to talk about it now.
Because it's important. There's a book out by Vasula Wrighton now. There is a heaven, and there's also hell.
I'm reading that book right now, talking about
how we have to be aware of both sides of the coin. What did Vasita say? And one last thing, I'm sorry. Vasula is going to be at Advent Bookstore out on Long Island on April 14th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a book signing.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go.
That's okay. And by the way, Al Barbarino is going to be at St. Raymond's Church this weekend and during the week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, doing a mission. And he'll be talking at all the masses on Sunday. He's our dear friend. We love Al Barbarino. We really do. And he's going to be doing the mission on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 7:30 at St. Raymond's in East Rockaway.
And so
that ends the commercial.
Notice how we're ignoring talking about hell.
Okay, let's talk about it. This is outlined and this is documented in her diary. And I'm going to read it verbatim. "I, Sister Faustina, by the order of God, have visited the depths of hell so that I might tell souls about it and testify to its existence. The devils were full of hatred for me, but they had to obey me at the command of God. What I have written is but a shadow of the things I saw. But I noticed one thing. This is important. That most of the souls there are those who disbelieved that there is a hell."
You got it. That's why we're pushing.
That's the majority of the souls there. "Today I was led by an angel to the depths of hell. It is a place of great torture. How awesomely large and extensive it is. The kinds of tortures I saw were many. The first torture that constitutes hell is the loss of God naturally, mm-hmm. knowing that forever and ever they will never be able to see or be with God or Jesus. The second is perpetual remorse of conscience. Their conscience is probably at a loss now. It's too late for them. The third is the one condition will never change. That their condition will never change. This is forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Eternally. Never. The fourth is that the fire that will penetrate the soul without destroying it. A terrible suffering, since it is a purely spiritual fire lit by God's anger, she says. The fifth is torture. Continual darkness and a terrible suffocating smell. And despite the darkness, the devils and the souls of the damned see each other, and all their evil is before them, both of others and their own bad deeds are seen through this vision. The sixth torture is the consent company of constantly of Satan constantly being there.
Yuck.
Tormenting them, torturing them, mm-hmm. tormenting them. The seventh torture is the horrible despair, hatred of God, vile words, curses, and blasphemies. And they're constantly swearing.
Do you ever get those kinds of tortures? I do. When I'm walking along and I'm not walking with God, I hear all that foul language in me. I really do.
Well,
and I bet a lot of you do too.
I think we all do, but you know, and I do.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I can't help it, Tony. It's such a fascinating topic.
Get that tape, will you, Trev?
It's not going to work today. I'm tape free. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, yeah, I do, and I get thoughts that I don't want to have. I say, well, why am I getting that? And I just say, Jesus, get these thoughts out of me. Just get these.
And we all get it in anxiety and fear and worry and doubt. That's all coming from that other guy who runs that crappy place down below.
That's right. And these are the tortures suffered by all the damned together. But this is not the end of their suffering. This suffering continues. Indescribable sufferings. They are special tortures destined for particular souls. These are the torments of the senses. Each soul undergoes terrible and indescribable suffering related to the manner in which it has sinned.
Yeah.
So it's all different tortures. No one can say there is no hell. Let the sinner know that he will be tortured throughout all eternity in those senses which he made use of sin. I am writing this in my diary at this command of God so that no soul may find an excuse by saying there is no hell or that nobody has ever been there, and so no one can say what it is like. But I'm telling you, because I was there, there is a hell and you must avoid it.
You know, but there's something else later in her book. I know you have more to read about her sainthood. But we're taking our time. We're in no rush. Take your time. And we'll go slowly. That's
Thank
why
you.
We're going back and
Thank
forth.
Thank you for not making me nervous.
Don't be nervous. Calm down. But later on in her book, at 1588, she talks a little more about how God is changing his approach. Yeah, there's a hell. And in the past, in the Old Testament, he said, in the Old Covenant, these are her words, in Jesus' words, in the Old Covenant, I sent prophets wielding thunderbolts to my people and all other kinds of things to just really get them aware they don't want to go there. Today, I am sending you with my mercy to the people of the whole world. I do not want to punish aching mankind, but I desire to heal it, pressing it to my merciful heart. I use punishment when they themselves force me to do so. My hand is is reluctant to take hold of the sword of justice. Before that day of justice, I am sending the day of mercy. And Tony and our guests will talk. We're living in this day of mercy.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry now, Tony.
But what did Saint Faustina say to Jesus when Jesus told him that?
She replied, "Oh Jesus, speak to souls yourself,
because my words are insignificant."
And that's what he does. We have three guests here. We'll come back to her, because the saint is going to be throughout the program, Tony.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
We're not finished. But we have three guests here today. You want to move that mic over, too. We have three guests to you. And Dawn Wyrick runs, or used to run, I don't know if you still do, the Divine Mercy Group at St. Thomas the Apostle in Hempstead. And George and Debbie Nieff are co-leaders, I guess, if you want, with that prayer group. How did you get involved with Divine Mercy, Dawn?
Well, I started Divine Mercy in 2007, and how it came to me was, I guess the best way to say it was, I was a lost sheep. And I felt an emptiness inside of me and just an aching in my heart for love. And I didn't know if it was from a person or what was going on with me. Every time I went to church, I would cry, and I didn't know what was going on. And I finally approached one of the priests, and he suggested me enter the RCIA. So in doing so, I learned more about the faith, and I met faith-filled, kind people. But what opened those floodgates of God's mercy is my first confession in, I guess, since I was a teenager. And it was a private confession, and I was very afraid. And by doing that, I felt God's love and mercy enfolded in me. I fell quick and hard for Jesus.
Well, isn't that wonderful?
And words can't express that kind of love. You know, when you feel so alone, you can't imagine feeling a love for something that you can't see right in front of you. You know? And when I felt that, I felt in love. And I was going through the RCIA program, and I felt like one of those candidates. I almost wanted to be up there on that altar because it was so beautiful. And then Easter came, and then right before, I went to the 5 o'clock Mass before Divine Mercy Sunday, and I saw that image. Actually, I'm sorry. Saturday night they were playing something about St. Faustina, Pope John Paul, and the other Polish, Kolbe, and how they almost were in the same vicinity, within miles of each other. And then the next day was the image of Divine Mercy.
And the listeners may not know what that image is. Maybe you want to tell them. Or maybe, Tony, you're prepared to tell them.
I'll explain it. The Divine Mercy image is very common, and mostly everyone has seen it in church.
Honestly, I don't know how common it is.
No, I don't know about that.
Okay, we have to search for that image when we go to a church.
Do you?
When we go to a church and we see that image.
Tell the listeners what the image is, Dawn. You can tell them.
The image is of Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, stepping forward with a red and white rays coming from his heart. And his hands are raised in blessing. One is to bless, and the other one is opening his heart. And what the rays represent are really the sacrament, the Eucharist, which is the blood and body and blood of Christ, the red rays that come out, and then the white rays, or water, which cleanses us and washes away our sins. And, you know, I was just talking in the car, it's like it's a representative, really, of all the sacraments, because the Holy Spirit is present there with those sacraments. The vocation of the priesthood, Jesus as a priest blessing us, healing the sick, you know, that image is of a loving and merciful God. And he shines his rays upon us all the time. That love is there, that mercy. He's stepping forward. He's stepping towards us.
And it goes from his heart to yours.
Right.
And it's that personal and that intimate.
Yes. And that's the red image, the red lines coming
and
from
the
his heart of the picture into our heart.
Yeah.
And then you went and got into divine mercy?
I started, it took me a couple of years because I had struggled with severe depression that pulled me away from the church. And Deacon Jacques Philippot has been with me from the beginning. And
we know him well.
Yeah. So he was supposed to be here,
yes,
but he's doing other work.
Yes.
But it was very difficult doing it on my own with depression, because it was hard for me to be around people. Depression is a very painful experience. And until you experience it yourself, you literally cannot get out of bed. It's painful to do any kind of, just simply washing the dishes used to be painful. So to go to Monsignor Lasante, who was the pastor at the time, and say, I want to do this holy hour, and he says, bring together a committee, when I didn't know anybody in the church, was scary. But I started it in little ways, and God gave me little angels in the beginning. And I started the first holy hour in September of 2007. And I, about a couple months later, maybe a year later, I'm not sure when, Debbie and George came in and a blessing in the ministry and a blessing as the best friends
I ever had. Did you follow the diary?
In the beginning, I tried. You know, I was on my own on this whole journey. You know, I didn't have my family to help me, and I was on my own path to this message of divine mercy.
So, Dawn, you were led to divine mercy through Jesus?
Himself.
Is that how you encountered the divine mercy?
Yeah. I mean, I...
Tell us a little something about that. How did Jesus do it?
It's hard to explain. I go with my feelings, and I believe God works with people and how he knows that they'll hear him, whether it's music.
Absolutely. He communicates in many different ways, through the Bible, through music, through thoughts, definitely, without a doubt.
So with me, it was, I'm a very, deep down, I have this love in my heart, and I'm a very emotional, loving, feeling person. So I go with my gut. If something don't feel right, I'm not going to do it, or it doesn't feel right. And I just felt that, it's hard to put into words, I just felt God's presence, the Holy Spirit touching me, and I knew at times, God, that he wants me to do that. Mm-hmm. He wants me to do this. You know, I knew right off the bat, as outlandish as it would sound, how am I going to do this, how am I going to do that? I know God wants me to do it. And when I had that depression, that's the one thing that I didn't stop to do, because the last person I'm going to let down is Jesus.
Right. And through Jesus, your depression...
It actually was lifted.
Lifted?
I cried out.
He's the great healer, you know. He's the best psychologist, psychiatrist you can ever find.
Yeah, I cried out in anger.
Present company excluded, of course.
I'm not even paying attention, because I've been led back to those words. What happened to you is just what Faustina said. Mm-hmm. Oh, my Jesus, speak to souls yourself. Mm. Because my words, Tony's words and my words, anyone else's words are insignificant.
Yeah.
And that Jesus started a personal, intimate, interior, experiential relationship with you.
Yeah.
Divine mercy was the vehicle. For others, it could be the rosary. For others, it could be whatever.
Isn't that a coincidence? Yeah. I read that statement a few minutes ago.
Sure.
You just read?
That's sure.
Quite a coincidence.
Well, it's right there. It's at 1588.
But I think that's what's unique about divine mercy. Again, we're talking about that in the car, is divine mercy, that's a personal relationship.
That's right.
And we each experience it in different ways. And that's why divine mercy we look forward to for many reasons, but it's that those blessings, those graces, that relationship that you have with God becomes so...
Yes, but Dawn, the fact still remains that the reason why you were able to receive it is because you were receptive.
Right.
You were ready. You were prepared. You opened your heart. You opened your arms, and you took them in.
You have to say yes.
You have to say yes.
Right.
And there are so many listeners out there that don't hear it and don't know how to say yes.
Well,
and Dawn, we're going to move over to Debbie and to George for a few moments.
Save that too. Dawn. We'll get back to it.
Yeah, we'll
save
come
it.
Right back because
he does that all the time.
I go where the spirit leads me.
I drag them with me. I make sure they come.
And George.
And they're a team, Debbie and George. They have to come together.
Tell us, Debbie. Oh, George. Debbie, you start.
Well, I'm a co-facilitator, George and I, with Dawn, and we have our Divine Mercy group in St. Thomas the Apostle in West Hempstead, and I have to put a plug in because tomorrow is Divine Mercy Sunday, and starting at our 12 o'clock Mass, we will have a Mass, and then we are going to have a prayer service, like a holy hour, so all your listeners are welcomed. We're on Westminster.
24
I think I'm supposed to be there, too, am I not?
I think you're going to be there at between 1:30 and 2. We have Dr.
He's
Palmer
a special
speaking.
Guest.
Yes.
How did that happen?
You can come also.
I'm going to be at St. Catherine giving away free
our
Bibles.
Our next door neighbor.
And rosaries.
Right. Well, at St. Thomas, we will have a prayer service, and we will be also doing the contemplating my wounds with the chaplain.
Very nice.
Yes.
I'll take a rain check on that.
Okay.
And confession.
You have my name and number?
Confession.
I'll take a rain check.
Absolutely.
I'd rather be alone, please.
And confession is available during
right
that
after
time.
The 12 o'clock Mass from 1 to 2.
Right. Right.
Deb, tell us what happened. How did you get into this?
George and I, basically, we grew up in very religious families, and we grew up in Astoria. Mm-hmm. So we met in a church play, Guys and Dolls, 1981. And the first time I was actually, I mean, I knew the rosary. I went to church. The religious, we always went to church as even dating and when we got married. But I really didn't know about Divine Mercy at that point. And I guess it's because Divine Mercy wasn't really known to many people. I would say in 1991, I was pregnant with twins, and I'm diabetic, and I was having complications. Mm-hmm. And through that pregnancy, I was homebound. So I had to leave my job. I'm a school teacher, and I had to leave my job after about 20 weeks and just stay home. And that at that time, I was really basically home alone. George was working. And for some reason, through my complications, I don't know if I spoke, you know, I mean, I was speaking to people around me, but somebody sent me a letter from a prayer service or a prayer group that did Divine Mercy, did the chaplet.
And we'll talk about the chaplet later, but keep going.
But that's how really how we got exposed to the chaplet and to Saint Faustina. In fact, we knew her as Sister Faustina at the time. Mm-hmm. And in the mailing, I received this booklet on saying the Divine Mercy chaplet. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, from that point on, through my pregnancy, thankfully everything was successful. My boys were healthy, and it has actually led us through our whole married life. My boys are—they're going to be 21 in May, and tonight they're doing their novena.
When you say it leads you through your married life, how?
Absolutely. You want to take that one?
Go ahead. We both participate in the Divine Mercy ministry.
And, thank God.
Thank God, indeed. Yes.
And
I think it brings us. We do it together. It brings us brings us close together, closer to God. Even our sons brings them close together. So, you know, we say the chaplet together when they're home from school. They're away in college, but they come back and we'll say novena.
Would you tell the audience what the chaplet is? No, George, you know, you do it. You can tell us.
Well, it's a chaplet. The chaplet is a prayer that we say that begins with the usual prayers. You know, Our Father, Hail Mary, the Apostles' Creed,
right?
And then using the rosary. On every Hail Mary bead, you say the prayer. On a Our Father bead, you say this prayer: Eternal Father, I offer you the body and blood, soul and divinity of your dearly beloved Son, our Lord Jesus Christ, in atonement for our sins and those of the whole world. And then on the Hail Mary beads, you would then say in response, for the sake of his sorrowful passion, have mercy on us and on the whole world. And maybe you're going to talk about it, Tony, but that's when these prayers come into play with St. Faustina, when she saw that the angel was coming to destroy a city, which they don't really
know. Tell them about it. Talk about it.
But,
you tell them.
Maybe it was in Poland, because I think there's some degree that maybe there was because it was Warsaw or something. I'm not sure, but she was able to say this prayer, and it was the only thing she could, the only words that she could say that would divert the angel of death, if you want to say, away from his mission. And he responded to this, and it pushed him away from this, so he was not able to take vengeance on the people.
Where did it come from?
That came from Jesus.
Jesus kept telling her,
say these prayers, and that is in
exactly.
her diary.
And for each of the beads, the Hail Mary beads, you say,
for the sake of his sorrowful passion, have mercy on us and on the whole world.
And you do that 10 times, 10 times, 5 times,
right.
Like
so
you would
like,
a rosary.
Like a rosary. In fact, I know for us, we actually do the rosary first, and then we'll recite.
And Jesus promised Faustina that if you do the chaplet of the Divine Mercy and focus on his passion, and you're praying for a particular person, that person will receive the gift of the mercy from Jesus.
And I don't know if I can just go on one last
go
thing
ahead.
With me. My you know, this is how we came together, but the most profound effect on us was in 2009, my mom was dying, and I was down in Jersey, and I got a call that there wasn't much time left, and I was able to get back and meet Debbie, and actually we were able to say the chaplet while my mom was passing, and it was the most beautiful thing that knowing that, and she knew, and she was aware, but just to be able to say the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and in the chaplet it says, you know, that at the hour of their death I defend, if you say this divine chaplet, it's when it's said at the bedside of a dying person, God's anger is placated, unfathomable mercy envelops the soul, and the very depths of my tender mercy are moved for the sake of the sorrowful passion of my son. And it just brought us so much comfort.
Yeah, and the words are from Jesus to Faustina, say unceasingly this chaplet that I have taught you. Anyone who saves it will receive great mercy at the hour of death. Priests will recommend it to sinners as the last hope. Even the most hardened sinner, if he recites this chaplet even once, will receive grace from my infinite mercy. I want the whole world to know my infinite mercy. I want to give unimaginable graces to those who trust in my mercy. Those are the words that came from Jesus to Faustina, and it's words that are confirmed by our church as being authentic, as part of her being made a saint in our church with the miracles attached to the chaplet.
And by the way, an antidote is I say the chaplet whenever I go for medical test. Whenever they're putting me in an MRI, or whenever they're, calling, I'm saying the chaplet with the rosaries on my hands.
Right. I just want to
help me out tremendously every time. I also say it at 5 o'clock every morning going to work.
Right. And I also think it's important for our youth to...
And that's the point, yes.
I mean, I see it with, you know, our sons. I mean, we have one of our sons, when he's home, he's telling us, okay, when are we going to start praying?
That's the point.
Let's start praying now. Yeah. And that's really, I think, the direction we really need to go to.
So it all comes together. The Divine Mercy, the chaplet, the picture of Jesus, the Divine Mercy picture, St. Faustina, it all comes together and makes its own beautiful picture of love and mercy.
Right.
All together.
Right. And it's that connection of seeing the
Absolutely.
Lord.
Absolutely. By the way, just so you know, I mean, I get to mention, St. Faustina was the first saint that was canonized in the year 2000.
That's right.
The first saint in 2000. Did you know that, Palmer? No.
I know a lot about her. I know a lot about her. I follow her very closely.
Oh, wow.
Write down these words Jesus said to Faustina. Speak to the world about my mercy. Let all mankind recognize my unfathomable mercy. It is a sign for end times. Mm. After it will come the day of justice. While there is still time, let them have recourse to the fount of my mercy. Let them profit from the blood and the water which gushed forth for them. You know, Tony, this is serious stuff. And one of the things that can happen whenever people try to speak about it, we get attacked. Mm-hmm. And we end up caught in deep trouble. You and I last night had words on the phone about today. And I went in prayer and was told, no, keep it the way it is, you know, that kind of thing. But even today, it's not going to be the way he had put it together. You know, the one thing I found about my relationship with Jesus, he's very flexible. Mm-hmm. He's very dynamic. He's very interactive. And most of all, he's very loving. Mm-hmm. I cut you off, George, and I know you may have more to say about whatever has happened in your life as a result of mercy. I don't know if you do.
Well, I think the situation, the experience with my mom, that was just a strong and powerful event, you know, as she was passing, that to use this mercy, and we need only ask for the mercy of God. I mean, it's and I think people tend not to do that, but they're not worthy of it or something. But he wants you to ask for his mercy, and it's there just for the asking. And I know I've tried to grow in my own experience with Divine Mercy, and I'm in a Knights of Columbus now, and Knights of Columbus has a special mission from John Paul II to perpetuate the thoughts of Divine Mercy. So I'm growing in that and bringing more people involved in the Divine Mercy and how what it means and how strong and powerful message it brings to everyone. So I think it's made me grow as a Catholic, and it's brought me closer to God and closer to my family and everything. So I think that's the positive.
That's right, George. But as you were talking, I got in my head, this Divine Mercy goes even deeper than that. And the message is to all those out there is that no matter what you've done, no matter how far away you are from the church, no matter how you think that it's too late for me, it's not. Because Jesus' Divine Mercy is there, and he wants to take you back, and he wants to forgive you and hold you in his arms.
Exactly.
And isn't that so beautiful?
Yes.
Right.
That we're never lost. We're only lost at the final hour when it's too late. But we always have time, and we always have the opportunity to go back.
Right. And I also think it's the point of trusting in Jesus. And that's hard for people.
Of course.
Want instant, you know, I want this and I want it now.
Instant gratification.
And, right. And even in the world that we live in, we want to control everything in our life. And like you said, Dr. Palmer, Jesus is flexible.
Yeah.
He really is. But yet I think for us as humans, we're not. We want things the way we want things. And so most of the time that doesn't happen.
We're very
finding
structured.
That right. And I think that's where we have to break that down in us. And we have to let God come in and let him take that trust. We have to trust and let him take the control.
Right.
And that's where that's the key. And that's what I think for St. Faustina, what she was trying to convey in her diary, that
absolutely.
We have to put that trust in him and let him rule or direct our lives.
And he does.
And he does.
If we let him, he does. He directs
he
our
will,
program.
But
directs our show every
humans,
week.
We, you know, we're strong and we're.
And right
now
he's telling me that Dr. Palmer has something very special prepared, and that soon he should be getting at it.
Well, I don't know if that's what we want. So why don't we just what he wants?
Okay.
I want to stay with the theme that you started to pick up. That is. Jesus saying he'll heal anyone who asks for him. He said, tell my priests that hardened sinners will crumble beneath their words when they speak about my unfathomable mercy and about the compassion I have for them in my heart. To priests who will proclaim and extol my mercy, I will give wonderful powers, and I will anoint their words, and I will touch the hearts to which they will speak. And wow, isn't that something? Look at the power.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that so beautiful that we're capable of having that for us from Jesus? Isn't that amazing?
It really is. And he does follow through. This morning, I'm at home, and I'm upset about something in my family life. And I'm saying, when are they ever going to learn? Lord, you know, I don't understand. When will they get on board with the program, right? And he said, basically, it's a paraphrase. If you think you're having a problem with that, you're only looking at it from your limited time in time. I've been looking at this for thousands of years. Do you think know how frustrated I am?
History,
how hard-headed itself. And stupid mm-hmm. can people be?
That's true. That's
right. Where are you guys now in your walk with Divine Mercy? What are you doing now?
Well, at this point, George, he already said he started with the Knights of Columbus a little bit less than a year.
Wow.
So we're trying to work with the Knights. In fact, our Divine Mercy piece tomorrow is in conjunction with the Knights. So
very nice.
I think God is trying to put him in that spot there to get this group to awaken, especially in our church, to waken up to the power of Divine Mercy. So I think that's really where we're coming together. And, you know, we facilitate with Dawn every month, the third Friday of the month at St. Thomas at 7:30 in the evening. That has grown. And we also have the Cenacle, which is the third Saturday in the month at 10 o'clock in the morning. But now it's really bringing in this group of Knights mm-hmm. and trying to use the Knights and the Divine Mercy Ministry to work together.
What a good combination.
Yeah. It's a struggle. It definitely... It's been
hard to... Because it's a whole philosophy that we want to try to bring them together. And, I mean, you can use the power of both.
Them.
Right, exactly.
Right. And I've also done with the Knights, I've done a presentation in the evening for them to educate them. And I know what you say about the priest, and it's really important that the priests are aware of the diary.
And a number of them are.
Yes, yes. It's slowly growing, and it's getting there.
Yeah.
But it's just even bringing the priests on board and really this group of Knights we're trying to...
See, I look out over the diocese from my job, mm-hmm. now a volunteer job, and I see Divine Mercy as an avenue of tremendous explosion of
Absolutely.
God's love. And then I look and I see the consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary as another avenue. Mm-hmm. And then I see Anya's Day prayer groups who are contemplative and charismatic. There's another avenue.
Yes.
I see charismatic prayer groups. There's another area. I see rosary groups. We have Legion of Mary groups.
That's right.
And you see all the seeds.
Yeah, but it's estimated that today, or let's say 2 years ago, there were over 100 million Catholics that renovated the Divine Mercy throughout the world.
Wow.
It's probably much more today.
Oh, probably.
But 2 years ago, there was over 100 million Catholics.
Can you imagine if people would pick up all those pieces and internalize them, all those different avenues, and internalize them as the way of life? Wouldn't that be phenomenal?
Well, that's what's important about understanding what Divine Mercy Sunday is.
Go ahead, Dawn.
It doesn't stop with Easter.
That's
Easter's the beginning. You know, Jesus opened up the gates of heaven for us. We didn't have a place to go. And now, you know, he's resurrected and he's letting us see that. But what Divine Mercy is after that resurrection, is after all that Jesus went through that passion, he's forgiving us. And his mercy is still there for love for us. There were people there putting those nails in his hands, putting the crown of thorns on his head, scourging him. This is Jesus, the most beautiful man. and he forgave them.
Yeah.
And if he is going to forgive them, he's going to forgive us.
Absolutely. Right.
And divine mercy, what you need, all you need is to go to Mass like you go. Receive the Eucharist. Receive the sacrament. The most beautiful sacrament also is sacrament of reconciliation. How beautiful we have these two sacraments that we can talk to Jesus. And he showers us. And those graces he gives us are for each individual person. What's a grace to me may not be a grace for Debbie or George, but a grace for them. And it touches our heart in such a way that it's only through Jesus.
And you're just restating what Faustina had in her diary. Yes. Oh, my Jesus, speak to souls yourself. You know, he's bypassing a lot of old-time things that we had in our head. You know, I used to hear when I was a kid, you better be good or God's going to get you.
Right.
Well, I try to be good, but I found out God didn't get me with closed fists. He's got me with open hands.
Oh, that's so wonderful. That's great. That's is it. Perfect. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, because that's the way it is.
And isn't that so beautiful? So beautiful that Jesus is ready to accept us with open arms.
Yeah.
No matter how sinful we are.
Yeah.
And what we've done.
And like Tony, like you said, we have to be open to it.
Yes.
Right.
But how do we get open to it? When we're all at that point. We're all at that point of suffering where there's no one else there.
Mm.
In August, I went through, and it doesn't matter how faithful you think you are, with divine mercy, and I experienced this in August, when you surrender to God, when something is going in your life that you have no control over, you have to, and it's not easy, let go. And you have to say, give it to God, because in August, I was almost homeless. And I didn't have anybody to take me in. I had my loved ones, my dearest friends away from me. My family mistreating me. People betraying me. And I spent the whole month of August. I had the Legion of Mary statue. I prayed to Faustina. I prayed the chaplet. I went into prayer. And I said, don't leave this to the last hour. I mean, my landlord, she's listening. If she was kicking me out. No compassion. I had to be out August 31st. August 31st, I finally had a place to a home. At 3 o'clock on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
He waited till that last hour.
Last minute Larry strikes again.
You know, Dawn, as you were talking, I got in my head, but why didn't you know I never abandoned you? I did not abandon you.
I did know that. And as painful as it was, I kept saying to Debbie, I said, God has a plan. I don't know what it is. This is all for a reason. And I'm amazed that I was able to do that. And I said, I just gave it. I just gave it. Dawn, you have
a
place to go.
We weren't even together. We were in St. Louis. She's calling me and like, just leave it to God.
I was crying on the phone.
Leave it to God.
I had no place. And I just kept saying, Lord, I know you're not going to let me fall. I know you're not going to let me fall.
I got that so loud and clear.
Right. Yeah.
I never would abandon her.
But that's true for everybody who asks for help.
Yes.
He's there.
Yeah.
And he does speak to us in different ways. You had Debbie.
Yes.
That was God speaking to you through Debbie.
Yes.
And you had others, I'm sure, who helped you. And they reached out for you. And you know the hardest thing for St. Teresa of Avila to believe? She said, Jesus, how can I be your friend? Look how you treat us. You
right,
know?
Exactly.
You know, and anyone who tries to get close to God, you have to understand there's another guy.
Yeah.
He has that funny suit with a pitchfork, and he'll come after you and try to break whatever bond you establish.
He's just trying to step right in the middle. Right in the middle between us and Jesus.
And I have to say the biggest thing, I don't want to take too much time.
You can be fine. We're fine.
Because I started a prison ministry a few years ago, and, you know, people are hesitant about that, and those places that people are afraid to go is where God is.
That's right. Mm.
Doing this ministry, I correspond with men at Nassau County Jail, and when they get transferred, I stay on top of them. I find them, you know, and, you know, I try to express to them, you know, there's no one there with them but God.
That's right.
And that's their opportunity to have that transformation. There was a gentleman that I had given him the diary, and I gave him the chaplet, and all this stuff on Divine Mercy. And then he got transferred, and he's upstate now, and he told me, you know, he's involved, they'd say the rosary, and in his group, he told me they were passing out pamphlets, and the pamphlet that they were passing out in a prison was Divine Mercy. St. Yep. Faustina specifically,
yep.
Not just Divine Mercy. So the power of God's mercy is in those four walls as well, especially in those walls. And when you see those men transformed, it's the most beautiful experience, because they're forgiven, and those are the ones who are even more worthy of God's mercy.
I have a friend, Sister Frances Claire, out in Michigan, and she had a wonderful ministry. I'm not sure if she's still alive, but they did a prison ministry, and they would go and pray for people in the prison ministry. And in my wife's book, she talks about they went in one time, and the guard said to them, "Are you carrying any weapons of destruction?" And she held up a rosary and said, "This is a weapon of mass destruction." And when she prayed, there was a prisoner who had venereal disease, and they could not cure him. And she went with the rosary and prayed over him, and the VD was gone. Wow. And my wife in her book put a little title at top, "Is it okay to cure a person with venereal disease?" You know, but look at God's mercy. Out of nowhere, he'll touch you. And we're telling our listeners, that's what this divine mercy is all about.
Let go and let
go. Get rid of fire and brimstone.
Absolutely.
And know the open hands are waiting for you.
And the point that you brought up about the rosary is terrific. Isn't that the most powerful weapon that
that's
anyone
right.
ever has?
Next to the Eucharist.
50 rounds of Hail Marys.
Yeah.
That'll blast them away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they can't ban that example. Weapon.
That's yeah. right.
You know, it's right. just such a powerful thing. We didn't want to finish, cut you off.
No, that's fine. But
you can see how unsupervised and how restructured we are, right?
It's just a beautiful ministry because these men teach me about God's mercy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You see it. You know, and I just recently started more adamantly sending birthday cards. And the love I get back from these men, a birthday card. And what I want to tell people out there who don't pay attention to their birthdays, celebrate that day, because that is the day that God brought you here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very special day. These men, they get one birthday card. It's acknowledgement that each person has a purpose here. God brings us into this world for a purpose. And you may not know it when you're going through difficult things. I have a gentleman who is waiting to be sentenced. He's expecting a life sentence. I keep trying to just glance at God. Anything is possible with God. Anything.
And it only takes a glance.
It only takes one look. Just let go of the reins. That song
absolutely.
By Carrie Underwood, "Jesus, Take the Wheel."
No,
that's right.
How many backseat drivers you have?
Trevor, can you put on song number 3?
Can I just mention one thing before we play the song, John? Just want to mention that John and I are on Telcare. We've been on Telcare all week long. Tonight is our last night. We'll be on at 2:30 this afternoon and at 10 p.m. tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
And the song I really want played is "Unbelievable Love." Isn't that what we're talking about?
Absolutely.
Fits in perfect, John.
Father Charles Mancano and Lori. Your favorite. Trevor, turn it up. You know what? Leave it on. We have our own unbelievable love right here. Let's just hold hands. See, Tony, how good he takes over?
He said he was going to take over.
He did. All the time. Jesus, we are just overwhelmed by your love right now. You're with us, and you're blessing us, and you're telling us, get out of my way. You're saying to me, John, you had a plan in mind. When I saw your plan that I had helped you develop, I said, let go of it today. Let go of it. What these people have to say demonstrates my mercy, demonstrates my love. And I'm blessing each of you, he's saying in my heart. I'm blessing each of you right now and listeners, you too, with the power of my merciful love. Because you hung on while we rambled around and talked about different ways that my love shows up in your hearts. Now, we have people who send us petitions, but I'm thinking of Liz Castellano right now.
Yes.
Liz has Chiari disease, and she went into the hospital with heart problems, and she's been released.
She was home late yesterday.
Yeah, and I told her when I saw her in the hospital last week, I hope that when he fixes your heart, he also fixes your head. And that's for you, Liz, because you know me quite well.
And Liz is...
Don't send me any nasty email either.
She's going to send you. But Liz is the president of our fan club, by the way.
That's right.
And we do have a fan club.
And see what happens when you become president of our fan club.
So, Madam President, we love you. Our prayers are with you. And you're always in our thoughts. God bless you.
And there are so many others that have been touched by the love and the mercy of Jesus. We call the attention of readers to go online for the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. And you can read everything there. And if in any way what Debbie, George, Dawn, Tony, and myself said today piqued your interest about opening up to divine mercy, please let us know. Let us know that God's mercy has touched you. Has touched you. And I know we have a couple of minutes left, and I'm going to get that song in.
Go ahead. Get it in, Palmer.
Unbelievable Love by Father Charles Bangano. We're going to go off with it, everybody. Happy Divine Mercy Sunday.
Yes.
Thank you, George. Yes. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank
and thank you, Dawn.
Thank
you.
And, the Divine Mercy.
And thank you, John, for your hard work.
And thank you, Faustina.
Thanks,
and thank you, Jesus. Praise you, Jesus. Praise you.
Celebrate, Jesus,
the tomb, 'cause the stone's been rolled away. She covered her mouth in complete surprise when she heard the angel say,
He is risen, He is risen, and He lives forevermore. He is risen, He is risen. Come on and celebrate.
first to arrive on the scene, the Peter can dance in.